Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 58, recorded Wednesday, October 24th, 2007. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: who raves about their airline, and travel tech potpourri. So this week, coming to you today from the Gaithersburg, Maryland Marriott, just north of Washington, D.C., near the end of a rather intense travel week. Monday morning, I caught the 6:15 a.m. United flight from O'Hare to Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and this after catching the Bruce Springsteen concert the night before, Sunday night. I think my ears were still ringing when I passed through security. Monday evening, I flew American from Raleigh-Durham to Southern California by way of DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth. Tuesday, I flew Alaskan Air from Orange County to Oakland, and then this afternoon, I flew Virgin America from San Francisco to Dulles Airport in Northern Virginia. Tomorrow, hopefully, I'll get out of Dulles without too much delay and get to see the kids before they go to bed. And even for me, this is out of control. I had kind of a similar week earlier this month. Monday morning, O'Hare to Newark. Monday evening, Newark to Fort Lauderdale. Tuesday evening, Fort Lauderdale to Newark. Wednesday evening, Newark to O'Hare. And while this week, the one I just laid out a little bit earlier, while this week is more miles, I'll tell you, the Newark week was way tougher. I mean, a minimum two-hour delay on each leg. So, you know, that's just so typical nowadays for any flights involving the New York area that, I just dread going out there. You know, between the airport hassles and hassles getting hotel rooms, I push teleconferencing much harder with my New York clients than I do with, say, my California clients. Even though the flight to San Francisco is supposed to be twice as long, the airport delays usually equalizes the net travel time. But I'll tell you, the aggravation factor heading east is way higher than anything I face heading west. Next week, though, I'm back out to the northeast, probably battling LaGuardia this time. I'll factor in the two-hour delay and leave early enough Monday afternoon so I can enjoy a good meal Monday night. I'll tell you, a good meal can salve over a lot of sins. So following up, Dave of the Sand and Tsunamis blog, and if I flip over to that, Dave's blog is subtitled, Accounts of Travel Between Saudi Arabia and Japan of an Army-Navy Couple. Well, there you go. That's got to keep him talking. Well, anyhow, Dave left a comment on the local food topic in the last episode, Travel Commons number 57. Dave says, one of my favorite local restaurants from my days in the D.C. Northern Virginia area is Five Guys, the absolute best greasy hamburger joint I've ever been to. On my recent trip home to the U.S. from Japan, my wife and I simply ran out of time to make a trip there. However, after we successfully navigated the TSA shoe shuffle, thankfully not done in Japan, we rounded the corner and to our surprise, they'd opened up a franchise there in Terminal C at Reagan National Airport. With less than 15 minutes before we started to board our flight to Buffalo, we ordered, received, and choked down two burgers and their incredible peanut oil fries and a Diet Coke. Best damn burger I've had in a long, long time. So, flying out of National Airport last week, I skipped lunch with the expectation of taking Dave's recommendation and hitting the Five Guys stand. I am a sucker for a good burger. I get to the airport, look at the map, and see that Five Guys is in the U.S. Air Concourse, and I was flying United. And because of where National has placed the security checkpoints, you can't move between concourses. So since I didn't have a US Air boarding pass, no burger, no peanut oil fries. You know, I hate airports like that. New York's LaGuardia is another one of those that traps you in the concourse, though I'll tell you, nothing is as bad as Kansas City. There, security is in front of each gate. Once through security, there's nothing but seats. No food, no drink, no restrooms. Tough if you get a long delay. I'll tell you, luckily though, these airports are more the exception than the rule. At most airports, you pass through security and then you walk or tram between the concourses and terminals. LaGuardia and Kansas City are older airports. You can understand it a bit. But my problem last week was in the new terminal in National. I'll tell you, I'm going to find that architect and make him buy me a Five Guys burger. You know, that same day, I ended up taking a 2.5 hour delay on my United flight back to Chicago because of winds at O'Hare. They caused what the gate agent described as an inoptimal runway configuration. Translation: strong winds took O'Hare down to one runway. Okay, now that I understand. And what that translated to was me assuaging my frustration with a chocolate malt from the Potbelly sandwich shop while idling around waiting for an updated departure time. I'll tell you, I can't say, though, that I blamed United for the delay. I mean, going back to our last episode, I more blame the mayors of the suburbs around O'Hare that are fighting and delaying runway realignment. The next morning, though, I received an email from United apologizing for my inconvenience. "Dear Mr. Peacock, you have the right to expect great service from us, and we know we were not at our best during your flight with us on October 18th, 2007. Please accept my personal apology for the delay from Washington, D.C. to Chicago. We know how important a relaxed and hassle-free experience is to you when you choose American for your travel needs. We are working hard to ensure your next trip is better from the moment you make your reservation to the time you retrieve your luggage. We appreciate the opportunity to serve you better soon. Pamela A. Coslett, Senior Manager, Customer Relations." Nice sentiment, I guess, but you know, I'm not sure it had the desired effect. So United's note, which by the way came from, it said at the bottom, was sent from an email address that was not accepting replies. So if I wanted to reach out to Pamela Ms. Coslett and thank her for her concern, that was impossible from the email from which she had sent. Which kind of, you know, kind of tells you, all right, you know, rather than making me feel all warm and fuzzy, you know, the message just sort of reminded me of the bad time I had had the night before because it didn't offer any specific remedial actions, just a generic, "We're working hard to ensure your next trip is better." You know, I don't get any comfort that it's not going to happen again. And I don't know, perhaps United thinks sending out this mass hug email from a generic person, you know, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if Pamela A. Coslett actually exists. You know, maybe they think that this is a, you know, sort of a cheap way of improving customer satisfaction, but I'll tell you, it left me cold. My advice to United, you know, skip it unless you got something meaningful to say. Hey, Travel Commons got a little bit of notice recently. Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast gave me a heads up that both of our podcasts were mentioned in Acura Style magazine. That's a magazine sent out by the Acura car company to their customers. Now, having a GM-dominated garage, I don't receive that magazine, and they don't appear to have their content out on the web. However, one of Chris's listeners sent him a copy, and then he emailed me the blurb on Travel Commons, and this is what it said: "Mark Peacock's Travel Commons is well organized and produced, with music neatly running behind his narration, even when he's recording from a bathroom in the San Francisco Marriott. This is hardcore information for business travelers, covering topics such as negotiating various airline standby queues and rebalancing your frequent flyer accounts." Well, there you go. It's I don't know. It's a nice recommendation, and it's nice to get recognition. The comment, "well organized and produced," nice to get recognition for the time spent on writing and post-production. You know, I tell you, I continue to avoid tracking the total amount of time it takes me to ship a 20-minute episode. I know it's a big multiple over the episode length, but I just don't want to know the actual number. And that work, both the pre-production and the post-production, is the main reason that I can only manage to get out one episode of this a month. Hey, thanks again to everybody who contributes their thoughts, their stories, their audio comments, the voice of the traveler. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them at the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, who raves about their airline? You know, if you read through the stories of increasing passenger complaints, you'll notice that it's what used to be called legacy carriers, now they're called network carriers, that are driving the exponential upward slope. Complaint rates from US Air, American, Delta, Northwest, United, they're all up sharply higher than a year ago. You know, a colleague of mine who's executive platinum on American, that's, you know, sort of the highest tier, they got the little black cards and, you know, the flight attendants bow when they get on. You know, he almost apologizes when he talks about flying American. Old planes, tight seats. What am I supposed to do? He asks. I live in Dallas. I'm trapped. Now, you know, there's a commentary, and I'll tell you, I hear those exact same words from U.S. Air elites in Philadelphia and Northwest flyers living in Detroit. Now, compare that to this excerpt from a Business Week podcast, Behind the Cover Story series, from February of this year. John Byrne, Business Week's executive editor, was taking to task the team that wrote the Customer Service Champs cover story, and they left off JetBlue, this 2 weeks after JetBlue's complete service meltdown during a JFK ice storm.
There are three companies that I probably love. And I don't use the word lightly. Saturn, because for years I've just been a believer in what they've done. Trader Joe's, because I actually enjoy shopping at a food store, which is hard for any male to admit. And JetBlue. There is no company I enjoy better as a customer than JetBlue. I love the airline. I love the entire experience, from the clean planes, the leather seats, the TVs, the extra leg room, the ability to book online, to get your boarding pass before you go to the airport off your computer printer, the delightful experience the people who work for that airline deliver day in and day out. And I've got to tell you that on the Friday after this disaster, when there were still cancellations of flights, I got on a flight and went to the West Coast without any trouble at all. And I returned on the red eye on Monday and got into JFK a half hour early. And tomorrow, I am taking another JetBlue flight. I fly JetBlue at least once, often twice, every single month. And so, Jenna, how could you do this to my favorite company?
Quite a difference. I think John absolutely is raving about JetBlue. And as I mentioned at the top of the episode, I've flown a number of airlines over the past couple of weeks, but the two that people keep asking about are JetBlue and Virgin America. You know, these two have managed to carve out a place in people's mind as providing a good travel experience at a reasonable price, sort of a premium budget airline. You know, through some magic, they've managed to figure out how to provide, you know, something that the network carriers can't, a reasonably pleasant travel experience for a reasonable price. You know, I probably get more questions about Virgin America because fewer people have flown them, but that airline starts with a huge cachet because of the Virgin name. Now, I flew them for the second time this afternoon, this time from San Francisco to Dulles. Last month, I'd flown them from JFK to San Francisco Airport. I'll tell you, Virgin, it's a work in progress. It feels still a bit like, you know, sort of a beta airline, like they're beta testing. Like not all the buttons are completely operable. Now, the planes fly, they're completely operable, but the broader customer experience Well, it still seems to be a bit of a work in progress from the frequent flyer program that says, hey, we're tracking your flights and we're going to come up with some awards program real soon now, to their hyped, you know, they made a big thing about their seatback multimedia application on the seatback screens. But, you know, you start pushing more than a couple of those buttons on the touchscreen buttons, and they give you a message that says, stay tuned, we're sorry, but this feature is not yet available. So, I don't know, other than the overhead lavender mood lighting and the use of Google Maps for their in-flight airplane or journey tracking program, I'm not sure what's different, which I think is a problem for them. Their biggest challenge is not other airlines, but meeting the expectations set by Virgin owner Richard Branson. You know, when I told my wife that I'd been bumped to first class on this trip, she asked, oh, so you'll be getting a massage then, referring to one of the well-known perks in Virgin Atlantic's upper class. Adam Curry, the former MTV VJ who first popularized podcasting, blogged last month just a blistering screed after a Virgin America red eye from San Francisco to JFK. And when you peeled it all back, the sort of the gist of his rant was that Virgin America is not Virgin Atlantic. You know, I'm not sure that this should come as a huge shock. The U.S. domestic market is much more brutal and much less profitable than the transatlantic one. But Virgin America brought this on themselves when Richard Branson said at their launch that they were going to fix the miserable state of the U.S. flight experience. I don't know, maybe when they get out of beta. My experiences with JetBlue, on the other hand, have been good, though perhaps not as ecstatic as the Business Week editor described. A few weeks ago, I flew them between Newark and Fort Lauderdale, and before that, between Chicago and JFK. The service was great. More coach legroom than any network carrier, except when I get a seat in United's Economy Plus section. We added additional legroom there. And guess what? JetBlue actually gives you food. They walk around with a basket with a selection of snacks, and you get to choose one, maybe even two. I mean, it's the planes are clean. The seatback entertainment selection is nice, seems a bit richer than Virgin Atlantic. All in all, it's a very pleasant travel experience. But, you know, what really stood out to me is what I saw while waiting for my Newark to Fort Lauderdale flight a couple of weeks ago. I mean, the next gate over was a JetBlue flight going down to West Palm Beach, Florida. And there was some mechanical problem, and they were getting into one of these serial delay situations. And after announcing yet another delay, they also said that everyone was getting a $50 travel voucher deposited in their account because of the delay. You know, now it doesn't make up for the inconvenience, you know, the missed meeting or the kids' bedtime, but it's something real and tangible, unlike the United email I mentioned earlier. And they're not required to do. If JetBlue has a weakness, it is its hub at JFK. In today's USA Today, the lead article in the business section talks about the FAA's plan to cut primetime flights at JFK from as many, you know, last summer it got up to airline scheduling 110 flights an hour in the afternoon. They're trying to cut that down to 81 flights an hour during afternoon primetime as part of an effort to fix the gut-wrenching nightmare that flying to the New York area has become. You know, and so far this year, New York airports accounted for 37% of all U.S. flight delays. Also, JetBlue's rapid expansion at JFK has overtaxed their terminal space. Getting off my O'Hare to JFK flight, my first thought was, what a hassle. I had this great flight experience. I'm loving it. I step off the plane and it's not a step down. It is just you've fallen off the building. You know, from the worn gate areas to the dingy luggage claim area to rude Port Authority staff to long taxi lines to a long ride to Manhattan, I'll tell you, as great as that flight experience is, that JFK endpoint makes me really, you know, think twice about this. Now, it's funny, the odd guy out in all this is Frontier Airlines. You know, perhaps it's because They hub out of Denver instead of New York or San Francisco, but they've got a similar profile. New Airbus 320s with seatback entertainment and pleasant people. They got fun little animals painted on the tail of each plane, but no buzz. I mean, my parents fly them out of Denver all the time and have great experience. Now, Diane Tripathy, a longtime Travel Commons listener, flew them from New York to San Francisco by way of Denver in August and had this to say. The flight left Washington, D.C. on time and smoothly. There were snacks and soft drinks, but no meals. DirecTV was available for $5. The stopover in Denver was not unpleasant, but ordinary. A spare hour, paid Wi-Fi, and nasty airport seats with lots of people and luggage littered around. Where Frontier truly excelled was in getting out of Denver before the ominous storm arrived. Below us were tens of planes waiting to leave while we flew off to San Francisco, albeit 1 hour late. The flight was uneventful and comfortable, the service was good, and the attendants were courteous. So, workmanlike, but without the charm of JetBlue or the mood lighting of Virgin America. But how do these airlines do it? You know, it's not magic. They have leadership that cares about their customers.
Foxtrot Charlie, cross runway 17, report safe on the ground, he's servicing 190 degrees Fahrenheit, keep looking at helicopter lifting off at Capital.
Get across the police station, this copy of traffic wheel waiting and get everyone in the room, Foxtrot Charlie. Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah, yeah. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, Travel Tech Potpourri. So first off, traveling light. Mark Lowerwald, a Travel Commons listener and the musician who provided the bridge music in Travel Commons number 53, dropped me a line following up on our last travel topic, the discussion in Travel Commons number 56 about my ongoing quest to lighten up, to travel PC-less, at least for short trips. Mark writes, "You know, since you were discussing options to travel without a notebook, I got to share two photos of my newest gadget with you. The Nokia N800 is a nice little device. The screen is great for browsing the net, and since it is an Opera browser running on Linux, you can use the normal Gmail interface or YouTube, which is really nice. Typing with the on-screen keyboard can be tiring quickly, but there is the option to use a Bluetooth keyboard, though. A great benefit, on my flight from Hamburg to Paris and then on to Montpellier, no one asked me to take the N800 out of my bag as they do with the notebook. You know, coincidentally, I had been looking at the N800 right before I received Mark's note because it was the featured gadget in the latest email from buy.com. I wrote back to Mark saying that I had looked at buying the earlier version, the Nokia N770, a few months back when buy.com had a special on them, but had never pulled the trigger, and now they've got a special on the N800s, which looks like a very significant upgrade. But when buy.com has a special on something, it usually means the manufacturer is dumping inventory before introducing a new model. And sure enough, 4 days after my note to Mark, I spotted an article announcing the new Nokia N810, complete with a faster processor, a slide-out keyboard addressing Mark's major complaint, and a key feature for frequent car renters, built-in GPS. I forwarded the article to Mark, who, like all good travel techies, arranged to return his N800 to Amazon so he could get a new N810. Always the danger of travel tech. There's always something newer and cooler every 6 months. The second mini-topic here in Potpourri, power in airports. And in most airports, you know, it's still an Easter egg hunt looking for a power outlet while waiting for your flight. Scouting around pillars, scrounging behind chairs, stalking the cleaning crew, who, of course, know where all the plugs are. Finally, though, some airports are helping us get off our knees. In the United Terminal in O'Hare, there are banks of workstations between the gates. Actually, there are sort of a half dozen stools in front of a long table with dividers, but not one, but two outlets per workstation. So you think about that. I got an outlet. It's got two receptacles. I can sit in that workstation. I can get four things charged up. I can get my PC, I can get my cell phone, I can get my BlackBerry, and I can get my iPod. It's electron heaven there. You know, you walk down the concourse, and there you see just sort of lines of people, heads down on their laptops, beavering away under huge Verizon billboards. It's not as comfortable as the individual work cubicles or even the couches that you'll find in the United's Red Carpet Club a couple hundred yards away. But access to the Verizon seats don't cost a couple of $100 a year either. Now, other airports are not quite as generous with their electrons. San Francisco, Denver, Dallas, Raleigh-Durham, where I was on Monday, are some of the airports that provide pay-to-charge vending machines. The Raleigh-Durham machine that I was standing next to on Monday afternoon, waiting for my flight to DFW, was actually one of the more interesting ones. It's, you know, attached to this kind of Medusa-looking vertical board is just about every cell phone and PDA power plug adapter on the planet. Plug your dead cell phone into the right plug and feed in your credit card. You get 30 minutes of charge for $3. And whoop, there you are. I'll post a picture of the Medusa machine on the Travel Commons Flickr feed. You know, it's handy if you forgot your charger in the hotel room, but I'll tell you, I still like the simplicity of the O'Hare approach. Just give us lots of outlets in plain open view. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 58. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is a bit of a mix. The first two songs are from Magnatune, the We Are Not Evil label. The songs are Nachoon Gee. Once again, my pronunciation, you know, without a pronunciation guide, I'm lost, by the band Janoon. And here we go. This one's a lot easier for me. Old Mexico by Jeffrey Luck Lucas. They're available at magnatune.com. The last song is from Bruno Missoni, and I'm sure I've got that, or maybe it's Missoni, he's from Belgium, and his aviation music, a mix of plane sounds and music. The song you heard was Johannesburg Airport Tower Party. I don't know, interesting stuff, worth a listen. Check out the show notes for links to all these sites. And if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on the Travel Commons website. Thank you to everyone who has taken the time to send me emails, audio files, and to post comments on the website. That's it. Time to go to bed. Time to get up in the morning, do some work, and hopefully head home for the weekend. I hope you have a great weekend too, and take care, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart